Hello and welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast, the number one comics podcast on AIPTComics.com. I'm here with the smooth moves. My name is David Brooke, and I'm here with Nathan Simmons. Nathan, how you doing?
Hey, Dave, how's it going? Feeling pretty good on a Friday afternoon. We're both very sleepy and recording early. Earlier, much earlier than normal.
Yes.
Sun is still out. I mean, usually... it's a beautiful day, and we're inside talking about comics.
As one wants to do, yeah.
Yes, and we got some good stuff.
We do have some good stuff. Yeah, this week we have Zach Thompson on to talk about Kazar, Lord of the Savage Land number 2, which is out next week. Is it Kazar, or is it Kazar, or is it something else?
Do you get into that with
we
him?
Do.
Oh, good. Thank God.
I actually get all of the pronunciations wrong of every single person involved with the book, and also the name of the title character. And then, like,
exceptional.
At the end of the interview, I'm like, I got it all wrong. He's like, well, it's all right. No, we talk a lot about Kazar and his approach, and it's a 5-issue series that's ending in January, but he's got more on the way as well. But we also talk a little bit about Undone by Blood, which is getting a second volume trade paperback soon.
Yeah, sweet.
This will be the 6th time Zach Thompson's on this show, and we talk a little bit about how he's trying to beat Scott Snyder for most appearances on our show. Unfortunately, Scott will be on later in the month, so I don't know if he's going to be able to top him at any time.
Yeah, they're the Martin Short, Steve Martin combo of the AIPT Comics Podcast.
There you go, yeah. He would love that comparison.
Sure.
But if you don't know, this is the Comics Podcast where we recap the biggest news of the week, we review our favorite comics of the week, we talk a little bit about the books coming out in the future, and yeah, trying to keep you up to date on what's going on with comics, and not any specific publisher either. We cover it all. Every show starts with the biggest news of the week, and this week, Marvel Comics revealed Marauders Annual number 1's coming out in January, and guess who's writing it? Oh my
Steve
god,
Orlando?
So much anticipation. Yes, Steve Orlando, yeah. Who was on this show just last week with the Boulay brothers. The news came out early in the week. He'll be taking over from Jerry Duggan.
With some sweet, sweet Priestley artwork.
Indeed, yeah. And we don't know the full lineup yet, but he did tease that we'll get some interesting mutants on this team.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 2022 has a lot going on if you like X-Men. They also revealed, Marvel Comics also revealed, X-Men Legends number 11 will have Luis and Walter Simonson back. That's right. They've already done an X-Factor story with the X-Men Legends line, which is, if you don't know, basically telling new stories from older story arcs. And who better than the Simonsons to have them back to do a story about New Mutants this time around? I think that's what they're tying into for this.
Yeah, New Mutants, the whole storyline that brought in Apocalypse and all that good stuff. I'm just really happy to see Boom Boom getting the respect she deserves. I'm looking forward to this one.
Krakoa going on. It's newer than new when it comes to mutants. I mean, the whole status quo has changed, of course, and even more so now with Jonathan Hickman's Inferno going on. But this is a way to, you know, appease or, you know, make the old school fans happy if they're hungering.
It's a fun way to, because it's not just trading on nostalgia. It's actually handing it to these original creators and letting them tell, you know, play in that sandbox again and do things that they had always intended to or that they've thought about in later years. I'm really excited for this one. I'm excited for the number 12 that's got Chris Claremont doing an Excalibur story.
Yes, I'm sure fans will be dying for that one. Do we know who the artist is on that yet? If it's Alan Davis, that would rule, but I'm not sure.
I hope so. I don't know that it's been revealed yet. They've just started to tease it. They said there's going to be a full announcement soon for that one.
Yeah. We'll find out more, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But probably the biggest news... I should just say that throughout the entire news portion.
And then also for our other segments. And the biggest news this week is this is Nathan's second favorite book of the week.
There you go, yeah. No, so apparently on Thursday night, the solicit for 10 Deaths of Wolverine and X Lives of Wolverine. Did I get that right? I forget. We had Ben Percy on a couple weeks ago.
That's
correct. And told us the solicit for these came out, so everybody if you're in the know and on Reddit you already knew this news, but so I'm sure that's why Marvel let live let leak? I don't know. This news late Friday that basically the solicit, but also covers for issue one and two of both of these books by Adam Kubert. And so basically, this is crazy. Do you like time travel? Do you like Wolverine?
I love both of those things, especially when they're combined.
And 2022 is for you.
This first cover rules with all the different versions of Wolverine together.
It's pretty great.
Super cool.
So they're promising... So Wolverine has to go back in time and, like, I don't know if he's visiting his other selves or becoming them, but he needs to save a very important mutant from death. And I immediately think, oh, if they're doing time travel with Wolverine, maybe they're trying to, like... You know, so often in modern comics, they're trying to, like, fix or clean up some problems with characters... Like Kazar, we get into that a little bit with Zach Thompson.
Cool.
Maybe, you know, Wolverine has a lot of personas over the years, like Patch and Weapon X. I mean, they all have distinct moments in their periods, but maybe this is a way for Percy to kind of iron out Wolverine.
Unify it.
Yeah. Oh my God, there's a cowboy Wolverine on this cover.
Yeah. Love it.
But no, this this will be a weekly series trading off between both the titles, and it will feature art by Joshua Cassera and Federico Vicentini with covers by Adam Kubert.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, we're pumped for that. If
good team.
You like DC Comics, though,
yeah,
you should
and if you,
listen.
If you love fans, if you're a fan and you love domes.
If you like Stephen King's The Dome. Also, Superman. Yeah. No, you should definitely listen to this podcast next week. I think it's next week, right? Or maybe not. It'll be too early. Yes, it will be too early. So DC fandom is October 16th, and
that's right. Yes,
I swear to God, DC was very clever. They knew New York Comic Con was going on this week, and they thought, let's pump up the people with all the details about our virtual convention while that convention's happening, so that we can feed off of the convention desires of the people.
I will say, and we talked about this a little bit off mic, and also I've talked about this in my day job, where I am really excited for Fandome. I loved the last convention. I thought it was really well organized and had some really fun things for people who aren't necessarily into one or the other. If you're into the movies, they've got a channel for movies. If you are into the comics, they've got a whole bunch of comics discussions. They've also got channels on fan art and all this other stuff. But we still don't have a schedule for this convention. No. And so... It's kind of like you've got to be unless they do it in the next couple of days and then this conversation is dated. they've got to drop it soon or else people are going to be like, I guess I'll watch the whole thing for the specific thing I'm excited for.
Yeah, because I think they're doing it better than other virtual conventions in part because it is sort of live. There's only you can only rewind 30 seconds when you're watching it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the main panels are at a specific time and you have to be tuned in to watch it.
And they've got some good talent coming in for sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's all pre-recorded too. So
yes,
but yeah, you're right. In the top of our fandom news, they reveal their all-star lineup of creators and whatnot that are going to be attending and presenting. They did so via a video. So I actually saw someone on Reddit screen grabbed all of the clips of all the names and then just posted them all into this collage.
That's helpful.
I wrote them out in a quick little article I wrote, but some of the big names were J.J. Abrams, Pierce Brosnan, John Cena, Kali Coco. Wait a minute. These are all actors and Hollywood people. What is going on here?
Yeah.
James Gunn, Patty Jenkins, Dwayne Johnson.
Bruce Timm,
yeah. Todd McFarlane, Reggie Hudlin. Those are some comics creators that'll be attending.
Right.
Todd McFarlane must be there to talk about the toys, right? I mean, that's the only reason you'd be there, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, those toys are great. So that's all. I mean, and there's also going to be stuff for... I know that they're revealing new footage from the fourth season of Young Justice. They've got some stuff for Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League and the new Gotham Knights video game. There's supposed to be, I think, a new full trailer for the Batman.
Yes.
For Matt Reeves, the Batman, as well as stuff for Peacemaker and Black Adam. And so if you're excited about the movies and the assorted media, then you are going to be fed this next weekend.
I saw super duper fans someone saw in Finland, the Batman trailer had to be approved by their people, and you have to list how long it is, and it's 2 minutes and like 20 something seconds, and they were like, this is amazing, if we're gonna get 2 more minutes of footage.
Oh, I mean, I feel that.
Oh man!
Please give me 2 more minutes of Batman.
Yeah, hopefully.
Just I hope it's too. 2 minutes of just Jeffrey Wright as Commissioner Gordon. That's I'm so excited about that. So
who's playing Penguin again?
Colin Farrell.
Farrell. Yeah. I think. Oh my God! So if the Oscars were to do like a fun round, you know, because Oscars is all about fun. They have Colin Farrell as Penguin versus Jared Leto as that Gucci guy, because they both look like normal people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Let's take beautiful people and make them look normal. That's how you win an Oscar. Yeah,
right.
DC also revealed a not-so-secret Secret Origins app that you can use on their website to make yourself into a superhero. Now, the press materials make it sound like it's a super awesome, highly detailed app. But really, you get to pick...
It's a paper doll.
Basically, you get to pick between like 5 different character types, like Green Lantern, Superman, Shazam.
Oh, interesting.
And then you can change the skin tone, color and the colors of your costume, but only 2 different colors. And you only get like 6 options per thing. I don't know. I did a little article. I made myself as best I could. Purple, very limited on purple, I have to say. And if I were to review them... I'd give it like a 4 out of 10.
Oh man. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to get into the app review.
You heard it here first, folks.
But Image Comics actually had some big news this week, including the fact that What's the Furthest Place From Here Deluxe Edition, that's the one that comes with a vinyl record, has
which
sold...
I have pre-ordered. Very excited.
Yeah, I remember you talking about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
They sold 95,000 vinyl records, and they are going to put another run on this, an encore, as they like to call it. So if you missed it, no worries, you'll be able to get it. They haven't put a release date yet, I think, for the vinyl, but the issue itself without the vinyl is coming out November 10th.
Well, I think the first run is supposed to come out November 10th as well. That's when my pre-order is set for. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. It's got songs by the frontman of Jawbreaker and Joyce Manor, and there's a couple other ones. Such a cool idea.
Oh, here it is, actually. The second pressing will come February 2nd, 2022.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people probably felt a little bit left out.
Which is not bad, because vinyl pressings have been severely delayed.
Oh, really?
With a lot of the supply. Yeah, the supply channels. I mean, everything's getting different types of delays due to COVID or other, like, you know, natural issues that are happening right now.
Sure.
But yeah, the vinyl industry has taken a huge hit.
And then also the last bit of news for this week, Image Comics dished details on the Kurt Busiek universe, sirs, coming in 2022. I was not familiar with Aerosmith, the superhero he's got, but there'll be a new 6-issue miniseries starting in January, and then they'll do a reprint of the original run. They've also got another, they're going to start up Astro City again in March with the usual suspects of Brent Anderson, Alex Ross, and Alex Sinclair. They also have Free Agents, a brand new series. This one is exciting. It's got co-writer Fabian Nicieza and artist Stephen Mooney, who I love. Actually, I have a piece of his art on my wall right here.
Nice.
That's late 2022. And then Autumnlands, which I was a huge fan of. I was a fan of it before it was Autumnlands. It was called it was called...
What a weird title.
No, it was called like something Tooth and Claw.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Then they got
sued
or something because someone had...
I forgot about that.
That's with Benjamin Dewey. That'll be back late 2022 as well. And then they're going to be reprinting a bunch of Busiek's classic stories like Superstar and Shock Rockets. It's really cool that Busiek's like making a home for all of his content at one publisher. I feel like some of these things have been, I mean, we know, right?
He keeps taking them with me.
Yeah.
Keeps taking them with him as much as he can, too.
Right.
Which is, pretty bold of a move. I mean, we've seen similar things with, you know, Bendis moving his works around whenever he can. But it's difficult for comics creators to do that. Mm-hmm. It all depends on how it was originally published.
Right. I know, you know, it's funny, is this is one of the biggest pieces of news we had on Friday, like just insane traffic. I don't, there's a humongous fan base for Astro City.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't seem like it. I don't know. It's never like the number one seller, but I don't know. This book has been going for like 30 years. There are
people who love, people who love Astro City truly love it. And I think that's awesome.
They will kill for it. If you need someone rubbed out, you find an Astro
City. Just tell them they said something mean about Astro City.
No, find an Astro City fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. I guess you'd have to make some sort of plan involving Astro City. You can't just have them.
Did you hear what he said about Astro City?
If you're a fan of them, you'll murder.
Let me at him.
In our next segment, our top books of the week, we're going to talk about our top two favorite comic sixes of the week.
Yeah.
That was a plural of comics.
Comic-sies.
What was your second favorite book of the week?
I don't know, Dave. You tell me, because I think we had the same one.
Oh, my God. See, we have this problem on the show where Nathan reads my mind, and...
Yeah.
I just can't. I can't help it. I have to let him in.
I also have this problem where I will wait until the last minute and binge all the books I wanted to read this week, and then I'll find one that, like, I'll have something else on the list until, like, the very last minute, and then I will realize that, oh, okay, yeah, no, Dave was
he
right.
He pulls a switcheroo on me.
Arkham City, The Order of the World, number one by Dan Waters and Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this was, and I mean this as a good thing, because it's not always a good thing. This is exactly the book that I thought it would be.
Nice.
And I was hoping for something meditative and strange and poetic and horrifying. And I got all of those things in equal measure. And it looks gorgeous while it's doing it.
Yeah, Danny, the art style. So I interviewed Dan Waters earlier this week. Mm-hmm. I also reviewed the book, which I think is an ethical issue. But you know what? Fuck it. We only live once anyway. I told Dan Waters to his face, this reminds me of Batman Long Halloween in that the art style.
And he removed your jawbone without breaking the skin.
Yeah, he didn't even know who I was. I just walked up into the street and I was like, I think this. And then he hit me. No, it was over Zoom, so I was protected. But
oh, good.
The art style is so, it's not your typical Jim Lee style, hyper detail, muscles rippling. I mean, Batman's not even in this book. And
right.
Batman Long Halloween, a lot of it isn't about Batman at all. It's about these other characters. So I felt really grounded in a reality that exists in Gotham, in that it's very dark and dank and there are scary corners that you may not want to look into. And this book is doing that because after Joker fucking blew up the fucking Arkham Asylum and on A-Day, not only are there many deaths, but a lot of these supervillains got out.
And a lot of them are just trying to live.
Right.
They just want to, like, some of them are falling apart because they don't have the strict schedule and routine of living at the asylum. So some of them just want to go home, but are afraid to. And because that's like the only place they've been safe in Gotham for the longest time. And some of them just want to be people. Like, there's this, some of the villains we only see for a panel or two. The shot of Dr. Phosphorus and Nocturna, like, just trying to convince themselves that they're just like the people next door in their empty apartment staring into space is heartbreaking. I mean, you really, even as you're watching them do very strange and upsetting things, you feel for a lot of these characters. Not all of the characters. Professor Pig is a very upsetting man.
Yeah,
But there's some really, really incredible character work done here. And the Ten-Eyed Man has never been scarier.
Yes. The Ten-Eyed Man is actually my kapow moment later in the show.
Hell yeah. I thought it might be.
Very disturbing. Danny, I mean, if you don't know, Danny and Dan Waters worked on Coffinbound. I think the first two arcs are out. And Danny's style is stripped down, actually. I was reading an interview with her with Screen Rant, and they were talking, what did you do with character design? And we haven't seen Azrael yet in the book itself, but she said, like, it suits the character, but it's stripped down. It's simpler. Yeah. And
you do see his, like, his silhouette at one point, but that's about it. Like when he's stalking through the sewers.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. But
Yeah, I'm really excited for fans to enjoy this. I'm really excited to see where it goes and what it'll read mm-hmm. like when it's collected in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's this one gives you a lot of like the broad strokes of who the characters will be and kind of invites you to sympathize with both their plight, but also to understand what their freedom means for the regular people of Gotham City.
Right, right.
There's some, it's a horror book that has violent moments, but it's not gory, which I think is a real, really interesting thing to note. Like there's definitely blood in this book and things that will get under your skin. I mean, there's a bit with Ratcatcher toward the beginning of the issue that like sincerely like gave me chills.
Yeah.
But it is much more of a horror of the mind than anything else. And I really dig
horror
it.
Horror of the mind. I asked Dan Waters, I mentioned the whole TV thing like you were talking about a second ago. Like, you know, these villains watch TV. And he goes, everybody watches TV. I go, what does Joker watch? And Dan Waters said, Leno. And I thought, I didn't see that coming. I said, Kim Kardashian, you know, the Kardashians would make more sense to me. And he's like, oh, yeah, that is like the ultimate chaos TV.
That's great.
What was your favorite book of the week, though?
My favorite book of the week was The Swamp Thing, number 8, by Rom V and Mike Perkins. This finishes up the arc of Swamp Thing versus the Suicide Squad, also manages to introduce a new villain, and sort of wrap up the deep dive into the new Swamp Thing's origin story. It recontextualizes how the Green chooses its avatars. Like the previous stories have always kind of built off of these Swamp Thing characters being the result of a tragedy, but it's normally like a very literal physical, you know, a fire or an explosion or something like that. And this one, this really forwards the idea that, you know, not all trauma is physical, and that the Green seeks out broken people to help them like fight back. Mm. So it's interesting. It's it also wraps things up in a way that I didn't expect that I think opens up some interesting possibilities for the Suicide Squad themselves that I would love to see explored in other storylines and sets it up for the, you know, the last couple issues of this arc. I think every single one of these issues has been on my top books, and for good reason. This is an all-timer run for me for this character.
And knowing how much you love Swamp Thing and how long you've been reading Swamp Thing, that's huge.
Yeah. No, I absolutely adore this series, and I'm very happy that it's going to continue past the initial 10 issues.
I think a lot of fans are too. Yeah, it's kind of book that, you know, a certain type of fan adores it to death, but it may not necessarily reach a wider audience. You know, it doesn't have boobs and butts and rippling muscles like we all, like the general audience only cares about.
There's butts. It's just they're covered in moss.
If that's your kind of thing, that's fine by me. My favorite book of the week was We Have Demons, number 1, by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. This is Scott Snyder's very first Comixology original series, one of the of 8 that are coming out in the next couple months.
Wild.
Three are actually launching this month.
Yeah.
And so this book is, you can tell Snyder and Capullo are playing around with the art form. They're playing around with storytelling. I actually asked our comics feature editor, Chris Copeland, if there's a name for it. Maybe you can answer this question for me. You know how in Spawn there are the news programs, and you see like the pundit, and then you see just a block of text to the left of it.
Well, like the Chiron, or
like it's like just text on one side, and then like panel of like a news pundit talking.
It's
something he's used in Spawn from the very beginning, but you see that from the very start of this book. Actually, the first third of the book has this format of black gutters and just narration down the left side of the page. And then panel, which kind of gives you a little color of what's going on. And then the captions are inside the character's head, who is in like a god mode narrating as if, you know, they're talking to us.
Okay.
Which is a bold move, Cotton. And this this kind of pulls us into the story of it features this young girl who loses her arm very early in the story as a little kid. And her father is like always making her new arms that are more technologically advanced. He's a pastor, very passionate. And they kind of have a falling out when she's in her teens, as one does in their teens with their parents.
Sure.
And the big hook of the story is, I have to spoil it because I have to talk about it a little bit.
Okay.
Snyder has this idea about faith that's really interesting and feels really original, but also it doesn't make it religious-y. It makes it adventure action-y.
Okay.
Where we get, it's basically, the story has a creation myth in within its pages, which I'm a sucker for, so it probably already had me at that point. But the creation myth part of it is, explains how angels and demons exist from, like, asteroids hitting the Earth, and there's this very rare metal that is tied to faith, but there are only so many blades left now, and they've been handed down for centuries, and they're the only thing that can kill demons. And, our main character suffers a major loss at the end and is introduced to a character that knew her father well, but she didn't know anything about her father's secret life, which I didn't spoil, I don't think. But so it's not quite a Halloween horror book, but it definitely has that vibe with the visuals. Capullo does some incredible stuff with the demons later in the issue. Nice. Some crazy intestines flying at us, a la The Thing.
Okay.
And wow. No, yeah, it's a really good action adventure book, and it I'm excited for folks to read Clear out next week. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see Snyder kind of and Capullo now going outside of the realm of your traditional Batman superhero book.
Yeah, definitely.
So check those out, folks. Those are AIPT Comics Podcast approved.
Approved.
Boom. That was a stamp.
Yeah, that's a good stamp sound.
In our next segment, standout.
Kapow!
Moment of the week! I should do another solo, but not a guitar this time. Like a sax. That's pretty good.
Oh, wait. What's the bit? What's the thing with Daylight from Community?
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Anyway, enjoy.
What was your favorite moment of the week there, Nathan?
So sometimes I go for things that are like super badass. Ooh. And then other times I go for something that just delighted me. And, I had to pick a moment from Amazing Spider-Man 75, the lead story Beyond by Zeb Wells and Patrick Gleason. Although the whole issue is worth reading. There's a whole mess of people doing great work, great backup stories. It's totally worth a buy. But the Spider-Man arrives to fight a bunch of villains. Pete arrives. He's already run into Ben Reilly earlier in the issue, who's, you know, running around in a fancier Spidey suit. And he swings in and says, I'm so glad you're all here. We superheroes have been talking and decided someone had to tell you guys smell. Like, there's a distinct odor and it's not good. And then the response from the bad guys is, that wasn't funny the first time we heard it. And that's when Pete realizes that Ben Reilly's already on the scene.
Right.
And I just thought that was such a fun concept that, of course, they would, a clone, he would have the same shitty jokes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It made me really smile. Made me really, like, this, I was smiling ear to ear through a lot of this issue. But that moment in particular just, really tickled me and reminded me why I like Ben as a character.
It's a cool moment too, because it's like a nod to the audience. Like, don't worry, Ben may be taking over the series, but he's so close to Peter that they actually say the same quips.
You guys are still taken care of. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, that's a great moment. That whole issue is really good. I was close to adding it to my top two.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it just got beat out by Arkham. For sure.
But you better pick that up soon, because the next issue's already out next week.
Oh, I know. Yeah, because it's weekly now. That's nuts.
It's weekly, but it's not. It's three issues a month, so there's a gap somewhere in there. I don't know why. What would you call that? It's not weekly. It's three-quee?
Trikely.
Trikely, yes.
Trikely. It's trikely.
Our audience that rides trikes understands that terminology.
Yeah.
My standout Kapow moment of the week is from Arkham City, The Order of the World by Danny and Dan Waters. Yeah. The Ten-Eyed Man, freaky deaky dude.
Yeah. I would say. Loves to sit in strange ways.
Yeah, I think he should be part of the Cirque du Soleil. If you go to the AIPTComics.com post for this podcast, you can see the art in full, but I'll try to describe it best I can. Dude's got basically like sequins all over his face, and he's got some on his feet too, but he's bent in the most ridiculous way, like doesn't seem uncomfortable either. And he's like, our Dr. Joy, our main character, walks in on him like being all freaky on a chair for some reason. Yes. I also like, you just can see the bump of his genitals, the penis. What's the best way to say it?
Oh, sure.
At the top, to like confirm that he really is a ten-eyed man, you know what I mean?
And there's frays in his outfit and stuff, like that, are, and the strings hanging down. I thought for sure you were going to pick, because there was another moment from this issue that I almost went with where he's telling her what his different eyes can do. And he like covers up one and he says, he's like, this eye can see into your thoughts. This eye can see into the future.
That was cool.
And he goes, and when I cover this one, you can't see me.
That's creepy.
So creepy. Dialogue in this issue rules.
It's a character that feels like it's part of like wind, earth, fire, you know, like a element. It's not human, even though we know it's human. It'd be interesting to see how this character is used in the future, especially with the big surprise twists at the end of that issue.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there. We need to know what our top books for next week are. We need to know right now.
We got to know. We don't know. How do we not know?
It's that part of the show where we figure it out on the fly what we're looking forward to the most.
We find out what we wrote down earlier.
Then I'm going to need you to look into your heart, look into your mind, look into your soul.
Okay.
And be like, what is it that's coming out next week? Somehow I know all the titles in the back of my brain.
Legitimately don't even have to think about it.
Oh, good.
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina number 9 by Roberto Aguirre-Sagasa and Robert Hack, because holy shit, it has been 4 years since number 8 came out.
Yes, it's insane, right?
like, to the point where I saw someone tweet about it, or I think it was maybe Megan Navarro, Bloody Disgusting, like said something about it. I can't. Someone tweeted about it, and I was like, why are people talking about Sabrina again? And then the news came out that Kiernan Shipka, who plays Sabrina on the Netflix series, is going to be on Riverdale next season. I was like, oh, that must be what it is.
Yeah.
And then I went to look at the issues for next week and saw that Chilling Adventures number 9 exists and it's coming out next. I literally could not believe it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how this went under my radar. Maybe I actually saw the news and said, that's not actually happening.
That's a lie.
Because heard that one before. Yeah. But lo and behold, I am so excited because the last issue ended on a cliffhanger, and I have been waiting to find out what's going on with the Witch War ever since 2017. I love this series. It takes the trappings of the Sabrina storyline and plugs them into this insane very not necessarily Lovecraftian, but also very inspired by the works of Edgar Allan Poe and dark satanic mythology. And it's crazy dark and weird and takes some super strange risks with established characters to the point where I'm like, this is a great horror book, even if you don't know anything about Sabrina. Mm. If you do, it adds so much more punch behind every moment. And I'm so glad it's back. I cannot wait.
Nice. I need to get into that. I didn't even get into the show. I know a lot of people love that show.
I did not either. Yeah, I had... And it wasn't anything really to do with the cast so much as like the... I didn't like the way it was shot. Like, it does this weird thing that I see in a lot of genre shows lately where, like, it looks like the camera lens has been rubbed with ham.
Yeah.
Like, everything's very blurry around the edges. Like, it does this weird, like, fisheye thing where I don't know why I can't just let go of this and pay attention to the story.
It's not mise-en-scene, it's mise-en-ham, right?
Mise-en-ham.
The French
I like that.
The French
I like that. What are you looking forward
to? I'm looking forward to Darkhold Iron Man number 1 by Ryan North and Guillermo Sanna.
Yeah.
Ryan North hasn't done any Marvel work in a bit. I think the last thing was Power Pack. Ryan North, if you don't know, is super funny, super skilled writer. And having gotten a quick peek, I haven't read the issue or anything, but it repurposes classic panels from Iron Man into this story, even though it's an Elseworlds tale, or it's maybe it's not Elseworlds, but it's definitely not main continuity kind of storytelling. Sure. And I love that concept. It was done super well with Immortal Hulk, gosh, like a year or two ago now. It's been forever. Mm-hmm. It was a really good one-shot that did the same thing. It's a really cool way to add a lot of importance to a scene by bringing back that classic Stan Lee or Steve Ditko or whatever panel that is clearly from another time, and giving it some extra weight to the main story. Also, this is we get to learn why Iron Man is drooling blood in Darkhold. One of the coolest designs.
That's the interesting thing, is like, it's not necessarily an alternate universe story. They've just been embodied by what their nightmares are, like what the worst version of them could be. That's what they've become. Right. And now that is rampaging through the actual Marvel universe. Right. Like it's a really interesting way to do an alternate universe story without necessarily putting it in another universe.
And if you want to learn more about Darkhold, listen to last week's episode. That's right. Steve talked about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. You always got to hype yourself, because if you don't hype yourself, who's going to hype you? Nobody.
I'll hype you, bro.
All right. In our next segment, Judging by the Cover, Junior, we're going to talk about our favorite cover art out next week. And once again, we're going to do some soul searching, some breathing, some stretching, some Pilates. I don't know.
Sure.
We're going to talk about our favorite cover. I like this energy I have in this episode. I don't know why. Is it annoying, though?
No, I'm enjoying it. I feel very slap happy.
Good. So, my favorite cover is from Shang-Chi number 5 by Michael Cho. It features Iron Man with his palms ready to fire. Underneath him is Shang-Chi with some nunchucks. That's not nunchucks. I forget what that weapon. It's like...
hang on. Let me pull it
up.
It's
like multiple poles connected to short chains. Anyway, it's got a movie vibe, like a movie poster vibe that I really like.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Cho has just been killing it on cover, variant covers for...
Yes.
It feels like maybe 8 months. He's been doing a lot of Marvel stuff, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man. And this is just another example of that.
Yeah, the main cover is great too. With Shang-Chi in the Iron Man armor that's like disintegrating around him. It's a really cool, like both covers for Shang-Chi are excellent.
Yeah.
I almost picked the main cover, but until I saw my favorite.
I think you picked didn't you pick a Michael Cho Shang-Chi cover for judging a couple months ago?
I did. Yeah, it was like the casino, because it was the one. Yeah, it had a very, I enjoyed that it had a very, like, Starenko kind of, like, old school Nick Fury vibe.
Yeah.
That's a great cover.
But who cares about that? What's your favorite cover of this week?
Well, my favorite cover this week, or next week, is Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, number 9. Because it kind of pokes fun at how long we've been waiting for this book. Not only this book, but other books. It's got a faded photograph kind of vibe to it. There's, you know, the kind of leakage on the bottom of the page. This is by a cover by Robert Hack, of course. Sabrina's chilling, listening to records, eating some cake with a skull, watching TV. And she's saying to the reader, "Hi, sorry I've been away so long. Did you miss me?" And even better, on the television is Afterlife with Archie, a book that has... I've been waiting on the next issue for 5 years. So it was, I'm really happy to see this universe back, and the little tease of Afterlife with Archie also makes me very curious to see if there's something in the cards for that. I love this book. I love this cover.
The rug has like a burned out, almost like it's film being melted.
Yes.
Look, which is neat.
I love that.
And it looks like the actress from the show.
Yeah, a little bit, for sure.
From that Mad Men show.
Mad Men.
Cool cover, dude. If you want to look at those covers, go to AIPTComics.com. Look at this AIPT Comics podcast post article thing. But,
right?
I'm sure you're sick of us talking about stuff, so why don't you join me and Zach Thompson to talk about Khazar. Caesar. Lord of the Savage Land number 2. It's out next week, and we're going to talk all about it. So on with us is Zach Thompson. Zach, thank you so much for being on the AIPT Comics podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This has got to be like number 5 or number 6.
I was just looking up how many times you've been on the show, because I know we keep bringing up that you're going to break the record. Yeah, this is the 5th time you'll be on.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So I think you're... Oh, you know what? Scott Snyder's now at 6, so...
That's fine. I'm happy to be second best to Scott Snyder.
That's true. So to start, Kazar, number 1 came out. I think it's a huge success. I loved it. Your collaborators, Matt Lopez, Jermaine Peralta, Joe Caramagna, I think that's how you say his last name.
I believe so, yeah.
I think as a team, you guys are just crushing it on every single level. How has it felt? How has the fan reaction been?
It's been really, really cool. It's you know, I feel like about a few months into like working on the book, I started to realize that we had something special, and that like, and not like in a conceited way or anything like that. I just mean like, it looks very unique. It is doing something very unique in the Marvel U right now. And we luckily have really inventive lettering that also structures like a sort of unique look, just from like, you know, comparing it to other Marvel books. And so it was really cool. It was cool to have that and have that little secret. It was kind of unbearable because I've been sitting on this book for like the better part of a year now. And I just really wanted to show it to people because I was like, I feel like we've bottled something here. And it's like, so yeah, it's been really cool to see people read it and enjoy it and to embrace something that is a little bit off the beaten path for a Savage Land book and a Kesar book. But we tried to sort of make this like weird marriage of here's something unexpected wrapped in sort of this package of still this type of high adventure Tarzan-y story, but it's dealing with very like modern things.
Yeah, so you have, so Kazar Lord of the Savage Land number 2 is out October 13th in just a couple days. For fans who may have missed the first issue, what might they expect?
You can expect sort of like a high energy adventure through the Savage Land, but now Kazar, who is like our Tarzan in the Marvel U, has animal-based powers, sort of like Animal Man, but entirely focused on the beings that live inside the Savage Land. So we're talking crazy dinosaur powers, but these are also sort of slowly changing his mind and his body as he starts to become this like avatar of the Savage Land.
So would you recommend people listen to Phil Collins while they read the comic?
Oh, hell yeah.
That's a Disney Tarzan joke if you don't get it.
Yeah, there's not going to be any like sliding on like vines and stuff like that. But like, actually, no, Shanna kind of does that Tarzan-y like sliding on vines stuff. So yeah, Phil Collins is perfect.
When you were last on the show in December, I think off the air, you sort of teased that this was coming. And then in X-Men Monday 2 weeks ago, you had said that this project started in March of 2020. Is it weird seeing it come out now after this super like extra extended period of time of it being in development?
Yeah, I mean, it's super strange. It's also the first time that I've ever had a Marvel book that I've completely written and sort of wrapped my end of the work on it. Oh boy, like in February of this year. So this project has kind of been behind me for a while.
Wow.
But what's nice about it is I was able to sort of look at the story holistically and make sure all the individual issues actually like work into the whole in a really nice way. I feel like you're not often afforded that macro view of things when it comes to big two comics, because they just kind of move so quickly. And so by having that, we sort of were able to make sure that the stakes sort of increase in every issue, that there's like a super focused thing that we're trying to tell you about this new take on the character in each issue, and kind of unveil sort of our big plan in stages. Because I think, like, I've talked about this before, but when you sort of like approach putting a new coat of paint on a character or changing the mechanics of a character, it can be too much for people. Like if you just kind of throw them into the deep end and you give them all of this exposition. And what I really appreciate about like House of X and Powers of 10 is this like multi-tiered approach to how you reveal things. Like certain things feel like you don't have all the information, but as you start to get deeper and deeper in, it recontextualizes what you've already read. And so like try to really do that as well. So like Matthew's character is obviously very deep into a story already by the time we meet him in issue one. And then we start to kind of go back and see what happened to him as we go deeper into the series.
You're probably wondering how I got here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You and Lonnie Nadler were on much like a year or two ago at this point, and you were saying like the Marvel method or the Marvel way of writing is like you're just like, it's like a rush in a way to get the script done, and then it comes out and it's just super fast. And then now your next project, I think we were talking about
Yondu.
Yeah, yeah, we were talking about that with Yondu and how quick that was. And then in this case, it's this like extended period of time, but it gives you more time to think about it. But at the same time, I'm curious, like looking at your scripts today versus when you wrote them back in early 2020, are you a different person now? Are you looking at that and going, I might tweak this, I might tweak that? Or are you thinking, oh, this is a different person than I was today?
I'm definitely a different writer. I think there's a quality to going back through these things where I kind of go, with anything, like when you get to sit with something for a while, you get more clarity around it. And I think like my whole thing now, to be perfectly like candid, is like to get out of Matt and Erman's way as much as humanly possible and let their stunning visuals sort of do the work. Because, you know, like I try really hard to think about page layouts and stuff that have visual storytelling inherent in them. Everyone does. But if you have someone like Erman, the storytelling's there, right? You can look at those pages of this book and you could actually read the whole book probably without a single line of dialogue in there and probably understand the bones of at least what's going on each page. And like,
right,
that to me was like, okay, so like trying to like peel back as much as possible, pare down and kind of look at it and go like, what work is the visuals doing that I don't have to do anymore? And also like, is it better just to let this sort of like, I don't know, did I let my more like verbose side get the best of me in the scripting phase right, when I don't have visuals in front of me, right? So like, it's a lot of that is just like hacking off limbs and like, cause I went through a sequence in issue three and Erman messaged me and he was like, look, like, I'm going to be honest with you. Like I changed some stuff in this fight scene and like I've put this sort of reaction from Shanna two or three beats after where it was in the script. I've moved some stuff around. So you're going to have to go through and sort of like Frankenstein lettering together. And I was like, man, I don't care. Like if, you know, I trust you completely, but going back through that process, I was like, okay, he's done that for a reason. And I can kind of go to that and elevate that even further by going like, was originally in the script that doesn't need to be here anymore? What could I put here instead? Or is there an opportunity just to let the visuals sort of speak for themselves? And I luckily, like my editor on the book, Sarah Brunstad, has been really cool with like kind of just letting us really explore a different storytelling style and sort of be more open about big quiet moments and that kind of thing. Or like just like there's a page in issue one where Erman drew like him throwing the T-Rex, right? And like you see the birds come out and then you see like four or five panels of Kesar just like slumped down. And like, you know, in a script that's going to be sometimes four or five panels, and he did my favorite thing is he added to the moment, he built in more sequentials. I think like when you're writing at Marvel, you want to do things that are like economical, but really what you would love to do in every comic is sort of have really intense visual layouts and everything, right? It's just like, there's not always the time, you know?
That kind of reminds me, I was able to look at issue two early, and this series has already introduced some incredible animals in really cool ways. And there's a really cool reveal in issue two. And I was curious, is that on the page when you're scripting it, or does that kind of come out as you're evolving the visual design like you were just sort of getting into?
I went into this with a specific mission statement, which was like, these old Kesar books have really big sort of operatic monster dinosaur type stuff. And so like, for me, I was like, I want to build one of those in each issue, but in a different biome. So like the T-Rex thing in the first one was very much, okay, here's something that's familiar to these types of stories, but now we're going to twist it and we're going to show you something new. And this second issue thing was also one of those. And so, but luckily Irman nailed it. And like, there's a lot of like, I'm pretty impressed with myself with the, and like the way it came together with like the, without spoilers, like dipping the head in the water and then what happens when his head comes out, and just like how the issue sort of changes pace from that moment onward. And like, and that was, to Irman's credit, like, you know, just so seamless in the way that his pages came in. But like, there's a lot of attention that I spent in the scripts of going like, this is the thing that we're going to be dealing with in this issue. This is the mechanics of how this thing works. This is how we're going to like sort of fight it. And this is how it's going to sort of challenge our heroes. Because I don't know, I just like, I don't often get the opportunity to create new things in big shared universes like this. And so I thought, purely as a reader, I'm like, what do I want to see? And that's pretty motivated, like almost everything that's in this book, because I'm just like, I don't know, you don't often get to work with an artist of Irman's skill level. And so like, why not throw this crazy shit at him and see what, see what he can do.
Here's a bit of a spoiler to what you were just referring to with the water. Did you have in the script, Kesar whips his hair out like a supermodel with the hair flying back and the water flying back in an arc?
We talked a lot about how he's got like a cosmic hangover, but it's like Fabio with a cosmic hangover was always the reference point. And so like, and I love that kind of stuff, because I still think like Kesar's still a very like He-Man-y type character, right? So like leaning on some of the visual gags of that, like there's something in issue 3 where like he's being spooned by Shanna, and like he's Little Spoon. Okay. And I'm so thrilled with it, because he's like, he's so awesome. Big. And I was just like, you know what, maybe he loves to be the Little Spoon, and we're gonna put that in there.
That's great. Yeah. No, that's visual storytelling right there.
Of course. Yeah.
There's a lot of cool things you're doing with the environment here, and there's like a techno thing going on as well. Was there any kind of research you did for this book specifically that you weren't expecting to dig into?
To be perfectly honest, it was more so the opposite, where it was like being asked to do something that synced so much with my personal taste and my personal sort of obsession. So like when I got asked to do this book, I was reading a book called The Secret Life of Animals by Peter Wallabin. He's like a German forestry ranger or something of similar ilk. And I was just reading about different animals and the inner workings of their lives. And then I get asked to do a book where Kesar might get like animal powers. And I was like, holy shit, like this is my time. This is my ability to sort of like take the things that I'm actually passionate about and that I read in my spare time and sort of marry my like outdoor sort of hobby with my my job of writing comics. I was going to say my hobby of writing comics, but it's been a few years now. And so, you know, like I just tried to like throw myself into the deep end of the things that interest me and sort of use this as an opportunity to kind of go like, what is my specific thing that I can bring to the Marvel universe that no one else can do or has done in a little while. And I don't know if like, that sounds crazy, but it's just sort of like, we're at a weird inflection point with culture where it's like regurgitating the same stuff over and over and over and over again. And I keep thinking like, well, I don't want to be part of that like wheel. I want to really step outside of it and go like, if I can do something that only I can do, even if that's reading a bunch of nerdy fucking environmentalist books about global warming, then like cool. And I'll put that through the prism of superhero comics at a moment where I feel like they kind of need to be talking about that stuff.
I mean, society at large needs to be doing it more too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
You spoke a little bit about this earlier, but with the lettering, I was just stunned by the lettering in the first issue and how it was layered, literally layered behind and in front of the characters. Was that in the script? Was that those ideas in the script, or was that all Joe?
So this is like this is another like cool Irman thing, but also a cool Joe thing. So like Irman does some of the lettering himself, in the line art with his like pencils, he'll put in sound effects. But then when it came time to do issue one, Joe reached out and was like, I would love to sample some of this stuff and recreate it throughout the issue. And so they started to have a dialogue about how to do that kind of stuff. And so it's a little bit of Joe, it's a little bit of Vermont. And then there's like the also like the visual flourishes of like that opening page that has like, behold, da 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 da, like it's this like third person narration that is almost from this like disembodied sort of like, I don't know, like Marvel multiverse perspective sort of like watcher type thing that's like talking about it in this like operatic way. And I felt like a lot of the old Savage Land stories had that like old pulp quality to them. So I spoke to Joe about that, and then he kind of came back and just like had worked out all the style for this stuff and like had sent Sarah an email that was like, this is the type of Savage Land book I've always wanted to read. So I kind of just went crazy and made a bunch of cool decisions. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. Cause like, it's always so fun when that sort of stuff happens. And I play with that a lot in my creator own stuff too. Like trying to play with lettering in a way that feels like it's additive to the storytelling, because I think the conventional wisdom is that good lettering should be invisible. And I'm like, no, like good lettering should be as visible and like integrated.
Look at it.
Yeah, like, but it's part
of the art, pretty. Right?
And it's like, it's such a, I want to like be part of the wave that says like, let's celebrate lettering as part of the dynamic DNA of comics and find ways to sort of like work it into the layout of a page. So it's like, you can have that page without the lettering and it is just a different piece of art. You know what I mean? But then they can sort of have this thing that like, I don't know, just increases the readability, but also plays with the world in a way that has like a thematic like hum to it. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know why, but it makes me feel like it's more pulpy because of it. Mm-hmm. You can tell it wasn't made by a computer. It was made by human beings that were putting love into it.
Matt's desaturated like color palette too really works into that feeling as well.
You know what's funny, I was thinking about this right before we got on, like you know how people say Fargo is film noir but written in reverse since it's Snow White mostly. I was pondering, like, is Kazar right now, is it like a horror book, but it's, I mean, it's not really a horror book, but it's so bright and vibrant, but could it be reversing the whole like dark and nightmarish shadowy with this brightness? Am I completely off by thinking that?
No, I mean, like, that's if I was to have a brand, I feel like that's part of like what I'm trying to do is like go like, this isn't, and you know, there's a flashback in issue one and it has like sort of a sinister tone, and then like the one in two is no better, and like those to me are sort of going like, okay, what you're about to see is a thing set in the Savage Land, but like these flashbacks or these nightmares are very much like, this is a place built on the bones of colonialism and these like European mindsets that have come to these places like this, colonized them, instilled themselves as the heroes of these places or centered the narrative of these places around themselves. And I really wanted to like go like, well, the Savage Land is basically that. And that's what Kazar's last name is, plunder. You can't really, like, in the world of 2021, you can't talk about Kazar without talking about that. I think it's, you know, and so like there's a, it's very much designed to be like, this place is built on the bones of the dead.
Right. The Savage Land has always been very interesting, you know, growing up in the, you know, a 90s kid or whatever and reading it, about it. It's always so mysterious and like characters kind of just pop up and there's a jungle or there's a mountain peak. Is there any desire to map it out in any way, or do you want to continue that? Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Erman's got a map. He made a map.
He does.
Yeah. So if you, once all five issues are out, there's like a map variant for each issue and you can put them all together and it's going to be the first like official quote unquote, like map since like the old handbooks in the 70s or 80s. Nice. Yeah. And like that was, I was just on a huge map kick at the time, like in that I was just like looking at imaginary maps and being like, oh fuck, I'd love to put one in a book. And then they were like, we need another variant. What if Erman drew like an official map of the Savage Land? And I nearly died. I was just like, yes, 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 yes. Because it's like, it is this place that I feel like isn't very well defined. And that's part of the wonder of it, right? Is like everything in the Marvel universe or DC universe has like a rubber bandish quality to it, in that it like it's malleable and it can evolve and it can sort of have new things sort of grow as the story sort of needs dictate. And so like my whole thing was like, let's pick five biomes that we do visit within these five issues and then figure out where they are in the physical space and then sort of create a map around those things. So everywhere we go is new, but it's with the intention of sort of giving like a flagship biome to each part of the Savage Land, if that makes sense.
On some level, you're feeding those fans that like to have everything in its place, so that 10 years from now, when someone tries to write a Savage Land story, they'll be like, no, you have to read this issue here, and this is where it is.
Well, I mean, like, I love that sort of stuff, too. I'm a very, like, I think about things in a very ordered way, and I have a lot of structure in my creative life and that kind of thing, and so, like, when given opportunities like that to create structure around things, I'm always like, hell yeah. Like, just cause like that to me, you know, if I had my way, I wish that you could, as a like freelancer, be given a handbook to the Marvel universe when you start writing that says, here's how some things work. Here's how this place functions, you know, that kind of thing. But because we're always building, there's never a point where you can kind of cut the head off and say, this is the definitive version of these things, but you can try at least for a little while. That was the whole hope, was like to give something to future creators that might be of some use.
And now with the map, people can you know, role play and do their own D&D campaigns within Savage Land.
Hell yeah.
So with a rich location like the Savage Land, where it seems like superheroes just somehow teleport there all the time, was there any desire to use any characters, be it X-Men or any like Avengers or anybody popping in?
Yeah. So, I mean, like it's always a struggle with Marvel because you have that sort of stuff at your fingertips and like you can like, you almost are like, what I wouldn't give to taste the forbidden fruit of like Stiltman going to the Savage Land and walking around with his tall legs and looking down on the trees. But like, it's just
forbidden fruit. That's
good. And I think for my own tastes, I had that sort of understanding of the Savage Land as well, where I was like, it's this malleable place where people pop up all the time. And so what often happens to Kazar stories is they sort of get caught up in the mechanics of that. And I felt like, when was the last time we got a proper story that focused on this family that deals with something that's new? So we'll create new stuff that sort of like, you know, can create a story engine for the book, but we're not bringing in Captain America. We're not bringing in Spider-Man. We're not doing anything that sort of like, I love the interconnected universe, but sometimes I feel like that sort of stuff happens less for because it's like a good story and more just because you can do it. And I wanted to resist those impulses and just sort of focus on the core family and a villain that I got to create that I can kind of go nuts with in a way that, like, I don't know. I guess I'll just put it this way. I kept thinking about Thor, God of Thunder, that first Jason Aaron arc, and dealing with Gore, the God Butcher, and how I was buying monthly comics at the time. And I was like, Gore is so fucking cool. Like, I just love it. Like, I ate that up, and I thought it felt so focused on Thor, and it felt so focused on Gore as well, and sort of that interplay between the two of them. And I was like, what can I do that sort of does that with Kesar that isn't robbing him of some of the drama of the story?
And one day, maybe your villain will also be played by Christian Bale.
Once you see the villain, I don't know. Well, actually, you know what? His body changes so much that maybe he'll be able to get into this kind of shape.
He'll just have to get into the machinist shape.
More vice shape, but then like with appendages that are sort of machinist in quality as well. It's a real
That's a real mixed bag. So I love the subtitle on this book, Lord of the Savage Land. If there were a sequel series, say, what would the title be? Or do you have any ideas for maybe a title? Or maybe you can't say because of copyright reasons.
I don't know if I can say, but I will say that, like, I was really interested. What can I say? There's like a new sort of status quo that this book ends with. And I was really intrigued in sort of looking at it through that lens, because I think what we're trying to do is strip Kesar of some of his baggage, so to speak, and make him more self-aware about the role he occupies in this place. And I actually think what could potentially come next could be even more interesting because of that. I think
Kesar's servant of the Savage Land.
Yeah, like friend to an equal balance with the Savage Land.
Kesar and friends and the Savage Land. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Like he's just a good settler who doesn't speak on behalf of the land, but just acts in a way that is beneficial to coexisting there. You know, like I think a lot about Canada's going through a huge thing right now with Indigenous rights and what it means to be a settler in a place that you're not from. And that's something that, you know, that's a role that I occupy. And I think a lot about just like this blonde haired, blue eyed, white dude who's like, this ancient land of dinosaurs belongs to me. And like, you're like, oh boy, like you got to really unpack that. And so like, that's what the book is trying to do. And I think once you unpack that, you can kind of go, well, here's what good looks like. And I would love to one day maybe do that story.
I really like the your take on Kesar, and it's just so exciting. It feels there's no other comic like it right now, which when it comes to the big two comics, you know, is uncommon.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many great stories, but so many of them feel the same or samey. But no, I think you're doing a great job. You're also doing a great job on Undubbed by Blood, which the second volume is now up for pre-order and out soon from Aftershock Comics. I think the last time you were on this show, we joked that you were going to do Undone by Blood for like 100 decades or something. It was going to go on forever.
And, yeah.
Do you have any, do you have a third volume in the works? Or is there any talk about that?
We're in this interesting spot where, so like, it's not a secret that Undone by Blood was like optioned by Norman Reedus's company, Big Bald Head Productions, and shopped around to be like co-produced with AMC. So like that sort of in the strange TV world where things take a really long time and lots of cooks in the kitchen, we have plans to do more, but it's sort of in this holding pattern because of how that may work out and what that looks like. To be perfectly frank, like, I think part of what happened with the book is that when things like that get announced, there's a sort of, one, you're coming back for something familiar and comics likes the new and interesting. And two,
sure,
with a TV studio behind your comic, sometimes I think people go, well, I don't need to put my money there because that And so like it's fine. It found a readership, but it was definitely smaller than we would have liked. And so it's sort of the thing where we have to kind of make sure that if and when we do it, there's an audience there. We would love to do it, you know, for years and years, because I think there's like a baked in story engine with the juxtaposition between the novel and the real world. And we could kind of do that in every era and every way, shape, and form. Like, we've joked about doing something like in Florida during like the 2000 election, like with weird Republican bros, like reading Western novels. Yeah. Like just stuff like that. And like stuff in retirement homes, World War One. We've talked about a bunch of different sort of angles and avenues. It's just like, I'll assure you this, Lonnie, Sammy, and I will definitely end up working together again. It just may not be on Undone by Blood, because we might just build something new. We've been talking about that lately as well.
That's cool. Do you have any other projects you want to talk about or that are upcoming?
I can kind of like vaguely talk about some stuff, but I can't like actually, nothing's announced. I think there'll be something with my name on it getting announced in 2-ish weeks after this comes out, sometime before the end of October, which is going to be cool. And Lonnie and I just finished the first issue of our new creator-owned book that will get announced probably in 2022 at some point. And we're reuniting with, I think I can say, Peter Kowalski, who did come into me with us. So it's going to be our second collaboration with him. And like, we're all really thrilled about that. And Peter's actually helping us write this one and build the world on this one. So it's kind of been like, we've been talking a lot since we originally did come into me years ago about like building, like we joke, but like a magnum opus together, like doing something that like only we could do. And Peter's a madman and like will just send us wonderful stream of conscious emails at like 3 o'clock in the morning that are like fully fleshed out ideas and sketches to go with them, like before we even have a number one. And so it's like, it's been this like really cool organic process. It's sort of taken a while to get off the ground, but we're finally sort of like moving on it.
It's like you're workshopping it or something.
Yeah. I mean, and it was greenlit 2 years ago. So like
oh my God.
Yeah. We've been taking our time.
Do you have an editor that's like, hello?
They followed up a few times, but we're finally moving. I promise. We're finally moving.
I mean, just think all that material that was sent in 3 a.m. could be Substack material.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah.
The Substack you want to unveil on this show, right?
Oh man. Yeah. The Substack stuff is interesting to me, but it's definitely like, I don't know. I keep thinking like, I don't want to inundate people with the behind the scenes of like how I make a thing. I just want to put things in people's hands. And like, it's interesting as a mechanism for that, but like, we shall see.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I've said on this very show a couple times, once the Substack cash is run out, will it continue or will it be like the .com boom where it's like, oh, wait, did we have a billion websites? What happened to PetSmart.org or whatever?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because it's like, I'll be a little bit candid about this because I don't mind. They're a giant company and they're not knocking on my door. It really only benefits the people that they've given money to, who are people who don't need the money in the first place. I shouldn't say so broadly, but I mean, just there's a certain level of creator that they've reached out to that doesn't necessarily have any problems finding an audience or anything like that. And what would have been cool, in my opinion, is them going, you know what, we've created this comics thing. We can give less money to more people who are smaller and nurture the medium on our platform in a way that would be really interesting to me. But instead it's like, do you want 10 comics from someone who already makes 10 a year? Cool. And it's like, all right. Yeah. I mean, like I'll be honest, like having access to the inner workings of like Jeff Lemire is really cool. I actually pay for the Jonathan Hickman Substack because I wanted to hear that talk between Grant Morrison and Hickman so badly. And it was awesome. It was super cool to be part of that. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, you do the math and you're like, 10 of these a month is like $70 or $80 a year. Like a couple thousand dollars a year, right? And you're like,
Yeah, the model, I remember telling people who have no idea about anything when it comes to comics, like war, especially digital comics, but like their first thing was like, oh, so it's $80 to like subscribe to Substack.com and then you read everyone's work. And I'm like, no, it's $80 per creator. Yeah. And they were like, what? How does this model make any sense? Yeah. I've talked to a lot of creators off air about it. So I've heard a lot of different opinions. And yeah, I don't know. It's a crazy time to be in digital comics or in that realm anyway.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I will say more money being poured into comics, paying people fairly. Fuck yeah. Like that is super cool. Yeah,
totally.
And great. But will it stick around and will it make a lasting impact? I'm always skeptical about these things just because I'm like, I want it to be good for everyone, not just good for a certain group of people. You know?
What do you suppose Kazar's opinion of Substack would be? I think Kazar probably would only approve of like campfire storytelling, right?
Yeah. I mean, like there was the Wade run in the 90s where he was like super into tech and like wanted to like go back. He had a Walkman that he was like really into that actually is in issue one. If you look, Matthew's listening to that Walkman as he's talking to the bird at the end of the issue one.
Nice. Easter eggs are always fun.
Yeah, it's just because it felt so goofy, but at the same time, I was like, it is like sort of the through line with what Matthew's going through is that like, I think we all sort of flirt with, and actually me thinking about this now, the book is probably this like reflection on how much do we want to integrate with the digital world versus how much do we want to sort of retire backwards and live in sort of a smaller, more intentional space, right? And I think that, like, I find that tension in my daily life constantly.
A simpler time when Twitter didn't exist and constantly aggravate you.
Take me back, please.
Well, Zach Tampson, thank you so much for being on the show. Pick up Kazar. Am I saying that right? Kazar? Lord of the Savage Land, number 2, October 13th.
Kazar.
Kazar. I always say it wrong. I said everything wrong on this show, including the artist on the book. I said his name wrong at the top of the show. But that's okay, because Zach, you're inching closer to Scott Snyder numbers to be on the AMPT Comics podcast, and we always appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me, man. This was super great.